Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Hurricanes out of season, blizzards in the summer, tornadoes where there weren't any before. Is the extreme becoming the new normal? If so, you could find yourself, as I recently did, sweltering one day, then trudging through foot-deep snow the next, without even leaving your home. Aside from the inconvenience, these extremes can be physically dangerous if you're not prepared, as the main character in this month's story discovers. On a day off, Ramon, an industrial engineer, takes a mountain bike ride to document the damage done to a remote stretch of forest by an extreme weather event. After an accident forces him to walk back to his car, a weird storm appears, catching him unprepared. But help arrives in the form of an odd stranger, who seems to be able to see into Ramon's soul. Now I invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 83, The Silver Thaw. Somewhere in some time, the extremes of weather might pry loose something rather unexpected. 9959 blinked in the upper right-hand corner of his contact lenses. Ramon shook his head, but the number persisted. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he knew that the malfunctioning clock meant that his backpack had taken the brunt of the impact. He rolled off the crumpled bag, pulled his handheld from the top pouch, relieved to see that at least its touchscreen was not cracked, and tried a restart. He had taken quite a tumble. The log, which sprawled across the trail, too high to hop over, had come out of nowhere. Hidden on the downhill side of a switchback, and at the speed he was traveling, well, Ramon hadn't had time to react. But he had also been distracted, recording the damaged forest through his contact lenses. Ramon turned to look back up the trail, where his carbon nanotube bike lay, wedged under the fallen tree. Despite its high-tech materials, supposedly strong enough to construct a space elevator, the front wheel had succumbed to the naturally engineered softwood of an aspen tree. He wouldn't be riding the bike back to the trailhead. That much was clear. Ramon rolled again, carefully getting up on all fours, checking that his arms and legs still worked. His left wrist hurt, and it was starting to swell, but all in all, he had got off lightly. The downhill pitch had worked to his advantage. Instead of slamming into the ground, he had rolled and skidded to a halt. He looked down slope and noted that more dead aspens lay strewn across the path, and realized that this must be as far as the trail crews had gone before giving up for the season. A freak July storm the previous summer had severely damaged most of the deciduous trees, the heavy snow bending and snapping them like toothpicks. Ramon had volunteered to document the damage for the eco group he belonged to under a pseudonym. Over the years, he had carefully built his online identity as Ramon Alexander, taking extreme measures to ensure that his real name and his after-work persona were not linked. He knew that his online friends would never understand that the only place someone like him could find work was in the resource extraction sector. Everyone needed a job, and they couldn't all be in some eco-friendly business, he had rationalized. But it didn't mean that he agreed with what his employer did. Look up Ramon Pasco online, and you would find a sparse personal history that led from a degree in industrial engineering to his current job. On the other hand, Ramon Alexander was an outspoken supporter of the Friends of the East Slopes, an environmental group fighting to protect the very area that some of his company's projects sought to exploit. As Pasco, he did as much as he could without jeopardizing his job to lessen the impact of the projects he worked on, while Alexander openly opposed them. And sometimes Ramon wondered if he were a modern-day Jekyll and Hyde. However, he couldn't change the fact that his aptitude and heart led down opposing paths. And today he was following his heart. He was miles from nowhere on a day off, in the east slopes of the mountains, documenting the damage the unstable weather was doing to the southern edge of the boreal forest, doing his own small part to keep the balance and do some good, while still making enough money to live. His contact lenses stubbornly flashed 9959, but the recording icon claimed that the video function was still working. So Ramon did a 180-degree pan commenting on the condition of the aspens and other deciduous trees before turning the camera off. Painfully, he picked himself up off the ground and limped back up to the top of the hill to assess his bike. It was wrecked. The composite rim of the front wheel and the front forks were shattered. Several carbon composite shards were embedded in the log. He realized he'd been very lucky that one of the knife-shaped pieces hadn't skewered him as well. Ramon opened the saddlebag strapped over the rear wheel, pulled out the freeze-dried food, emergency kit, and two silver thermal blankets packed in small plastic bags. He stuffed them into his backpack, then pulled the wreck out from under the log. He tied a bit of luminous orange tape from the emergency kit to its bent handlebars, carried the broken bike using his good hand to the top of the hill, and left it there as a warning to the next rider. Satisfied his sign would work, Ramon sat down on the tree trunk that had ended his ride and called up a map on his handheld. According to the GPS, he was well over halfway through the loop. Logically, the quickest way back was to keep going, and now that he was on foot, fallen trees wouldn't slow him down much. The map jittered, then suddenly jumped out to the global view, and a message appeared. Acquiring satellites. Ramon looked around and noted that the mountains blocked half the sky. Hoping the device had been right, he carefully wrapped his injured wrist with a tensor bandage, put his backpack on, and started down the trail into the valley. As he descended from the pass, the extreme damage to the deciduous trees was evident everywhere, some fallen over, torn out by their roots, others simply snapped off meters above the ground. Ramon gasped as he rounded the corner in the trail, which afforded a view of the whole valley. The ruined forest spread out below, as far as he could see. He blinked his right eye twice to restart the video recording, then slowly panned his head, stopping to zoom in occasionally, on a particularly bad spot. The scene reminded him of a photo he had seen once of the Tunguska event in Siberia, trees all splayed on the ground after the mysterious explosion. But instead of neat rows of fallen trees radiating out from a single point, the scene in front of him looked more like a herd of angry tree-hating elephants had trampled through it. It was a great shot. The mainstream media had never shown the true scale of the devastation. Instead, they had reduced the event to a couple of short clips of a few broken tree branches, a downed tree along the highway, and a truncated interview with a forest ranger, who noted how unseasonable the weird weather had been. Then the whole thing was quickly dropped as the news channels turned on to the next disaster. The July blizzard and the unusual dip in the jet stream that had caused it were quickly forgotten by the public. It was only the friends of the East Slopes who remembered and were trying to make the public aware of the true extent of the damage and the fact the strange jet stream pattern that caused it hadn't gone away. Ramon's reflection on the lackluster response of the media was broken when he spotted a bank of strange-colored clouds that had started to build up. Pinned to the peaks on the opposite side of the valley, they were threatening to roll down slope, blanketing everything in a steel-gray shroud. He recalled that the weather forecast had been clear when he left in the morning. Suddenly anxious, he tried to check his position again, but the heads-up display in his contact lenses noted the GPS couldn't acquire enough satellites. The valley seemed to be a dead zone, the surrounding mountains too high for a signal to get through. Riding as fast as he could on his bike, the loop would have taken 2 hours. But now on foot, walking at a normal pace, he calculated that it would take 4 hours to get back to the trailhead. He would have to traverse the valley, then climb over a low pass on the other side and follow a stream back to the highway. It was obvious to him that he would be caught in the building storm before he even got a third of the way back. A wave of fluttering leaves began to roll across the valley, pushed by an unseen wind, surfing down the front of the menacing cloud bank. It climbed the hill to where Ramon was standing, unexpectedly cold in sharp contrast to the July heat. In a few minutes, summer turned into late fall, and Ramon shivered as the microcells in his jersey automatically closed, going from heat transmission to heat conservation, trapping his sweat underneath, making him feel wet and cold even before the quickly propagating storm reached him. "You're playing with me, aren't you?" Ramon yelled into the wind in frustration. "The tree, and now this. Look, I'm doing my best. Just leave me alone." The only response was the sound of the rising wind whistling through the needles of a nearby spruce. His teeth began to chatter, and he knew it was time to get moving, to get his body generating some heat. The sun had succumbed to the storm before Ramon had even reached the valley floor, casting a wintry gloom around him. In response, he tried to pick up his pace, hopping over fallen trees where he could instead of walking around him. But the sweat trapped underneath the closed pores of his cycling jersey had become cold and clammy despite the added effort. On a hot day, everything would dry out, but with the temperature plummeting, he put the thought out of his mind, assuring himself that such a sudden storm had to be small and would pass quickly. Otherwise, the system would have been noted in the forecast. The storm would be over before he even reached the middle of the valley, he told himself. A hissing sound started in the distance and began to make its way toward him. At first, Ramon thought that it might be another gust of wind rustling through the tattered leaves, but as he looked down the trail in front of him, a gray wall was consuming the wrecked trees. It was traveling unbelievably fast. And before Ramon could get the metallic survival blanket out of his backpack, a cold, sleety rain started stinging his face. Like little metallic needles, the drops painfully etched his skin. He ran under an ancient tree, which had somehow escaped damage, to shelter himself while he rigged up a makeshift raincoat from the blanket. Wrapped in the silvery orange material, which made him look like a misplaced desert nomad, Ramon came out from under the tree and pushed on down the trail. When the wind rose again, making the angle of the sleet almost horizontal, he turned his head down, determined to keep making progress. Another half hour of blind stumbling along the barely visible trail brought Ramon to a rise near the center of the valley. He stood shivering uncontrollably and tried to wipe his face, stunned to realize that his eyelashes were beginning to accumulate ice and stick together. Ramon finally admitted that this was no ordinary summer squall, and that if it didn't blow over soon, he would be in trouble. In desperation, he looked around and spotted the place where several trees had fallen over a shallow depression in the ground, and decided it was as good a place as any to wait it out. He pulled out his other survival blanket, removed it from its tiny pouch, then lined the bottom of the depression with it and crawled in to wait. As soon as he had cocooned into the hollow, fatigue overwhelmed Ramon, tempting him to ignore all his survival training. Cold and sleep meant hypothermia, and hypothermia, even on a summer day, could mean death. It didn't make sense to him as he withdrew, turtle-like, as far as he could into his thin metallic shell. He had been sweating in the heat only an hour ago as he took his bike off the roof of his 4x4 in the parking lot, and now, instead of taking a lunch break in the shade of a spruce tree, he was freezing in a pool of his own sweat. Ramon watched in amazement as everything around him was slowly coated in ice. A tsunami of shivering started in his core and moved out to his limbs, and Ramon knew he had to get up and move, but strangely couldn't.
"Come on, wake up. You need to get up and walk."
The strange voice came out of nowhere and was accompanied by a rigorous shake. Ramon rolled on his side, trying to ignore it, but another sharp poke made the unwanted intrusion very real. He stiffly looked up and tried to open his eyes, but his body reacted like a half-frozen Freezy Pop. Ramon was surprised to find that his fingers felt thick and distant as he willed them to wedge his frozen eyelashes open. Peering down at him, he could just make out an unusually thin, hooded figure, dressed in what looked like tree bark patterned camouflage, coated in ice. The man or woman, Ramon couldn't tell which, knelt down and grasped his hands, rubbing them one at a time, until he could feel a burning sensation as his nerves came back to life.
"You've got to get up or you'll die. I'm going to pull you out of there."
The figure reached in and with surprising strength lifted Ramon out of the hollow, supporting him while he stomped some life back into his feet.
"Thanks," Ramon managed to get out between bouts of chattering teeth. I wasn't prepared for this. I thought I could wait it out while it passed, but the storm, why is it still here?"
He checked the time in the corner of his contact lenses. The display was still blinking 99.59. However, the battery was down several bars.
"Jeez, it must have been hours," he cursed. "What time is it?"
"Time to get you moving,"
the stick figure cryptically replied, helping Ramon put his backpack on.
"Here, let me drape this over you."
The figure reached under its coat and pulled out a crumpled poncho, apparently made from the same material as her clothes, and draped it over Ramon.
"This should help."
And somehow it did. After a few moments, Ramon's uncontrolled shivering began to wane.
"Come on now, we need to go while we still have enough light."
The figure impatiently turned and started to walk down the trail. Ramon stiffly followed.
"Thanks for the help. What's your name?"
he called to its back. The figure paused for a second, considering how to respond, as if no one had ever asked that question before Ramon.
"Acacia. You can call me Acacia. And who are you?"
"Ramon,"
Ramon replied, then added,
"That's an interesting name. It reminds me of something, but my mind is a bit foggy at the moment."
Acacia smiled, then changed the subject.
"You hit a log on your bike while videotaping the damaged trees."
"How did you
know that?"
Acacia completed Ramon's question.
"It was obvious. I found your bike near the top of the pass, and when I pulled you out of that hole, I noticed you were wearing contact lenses. And there hasn't been any tourists through here since the forest was flattened by the snow."
Acacia looked up at the sky.
"And now this, a silver thaw."
"A what?" Ramon questioned.
"An ice storm. Some call it the silver thaw, I suppose, because it generally happens in the winter."
Acacia reached out and touched an ice-coated branch of a fallen tree. She melted the coating off with her fingers, then turned to face Ramon.
"Only the environmental groups are out here now, documenting what's happened. So it would be a safe guess that you might be from one of them."
She carefully skirted around two slippery-looking trunks. The rain had subsided into a steady, freezing drizzle, which was encasing everything in a silvery coat. The crack of a previously stressed tree branch was followed by the sound of snapping as the other limbs around it gave up trying to hold their companion in place. Acacia flinched in response, then quickly recovered her composure and exclaimed,
"It's far, far too soon for this. The forest needs time. It reacts on the scale of decades or centuries, not months. It's barely been a year, so its wounds are still raw from last summer."
And if this happened again?"
Ramon shakily added. Acacia wheeled on him suddenly.
"Then the forest will never recover."
She backed away, then slowly looked Ramon up and down, as if assessing him for the first time.
"It was lucky that I found you, Ramon. You were well on your way to becoming as lifeless as the trees you were hiding under."
"I guess I should have known and planned for something like this,"
Ramon remonstrated.
"After all, the weird weather has been getting more frequent recently, hasn't it? But what were the odds? 10,000 to 1 or more? Kind of makes me feel like Mother Nature is out to get me. Dropped that tree where I couldn't see it, then conjured this freaky storm to complicate things."
"So you think you're important enough for her to even know you exist? I doubt it."
Acacia sneered, suddenly lurching closer to catch Ramon as he slipped on a greasy rock jutting out of the trail.
"That rock is just there. It isn't aware of you. It didn't have any intention. It didn't lie in wait for millennia just for you to trip on it. Nor did the freezing rain that made it slippery care that you were here or not. Both do what they do. Your presence, or lack of it, makes no difference to them at all. If you slipped and died out here because of that rock, there'd be nothing personal about it. Unfortunate for you, but not for the rock. To think that nature might have a grudge against you implies that you feel that you've done something to anger her. So you're not just here to help your eco-friends out with a little videography, are you?"
Ramon, his mind slowed and groggy from the cold, marveled at how this strange person had zeroed in on the rift in his soul. Suddenly spooked and suspicious, he pushed Acacia's arm aside and stumbled on down the trail. Effortlessly, she caught up, hovering beside Ramon, just a little too close, and offered her hand to stabilize him.
"Thanks, but I've got my balance back now. I'm feeling better. I'll be okay," he lied.
His ultralight cycling shoes were neither waterproof nor warm. In fact, his feet, despite the walking, were starting to burn with the cold.
"Who are you?"
Ramon demanded. Then, remembering the video cam and his contact lenses, he lifted an arm to wipe the accumulating sleet from his face and to mask the wink that turned the recorder on.
"I get the strange feeling that you didn't just happen to be out here taking a leisurely hike. Are you some kind of forest ranger or something?"
"A forest ranger?"
Acacia repeated the words as if she had never heard them before, then after a moment seemed to understand and smiled.
"Oh, you mean a park ranger, someone who protects all of this."
She waved her stick-like arms around to take in the valley.
"No, unfortunately I'm not. I just happened to be here today, doing what I must do. And lucky for you I was. Now tell me, Ramon, what do you do when you're not tearing through the woods on a bike, videoing storm-damaged trees?"
Not sure which Ramon should answer, he didn't immediately respond, and instead concentrated on keeping his balance as they walked. The part of the valley they were now in was covered with a tightly packed, isolated grove of spruce trees, which seemed somewhat impervious to the summer's snow and ice storms. It afforded a modicum of relief from the sleet, but the trail was laced with roots, and in the dim light under the dense canopy, it was easy to stumble. They walked in silence for a long time, accompanied by the distant sibilance of the freezing rain attacking the tops of the spruce trees, and the occasional crackle of dry twigs underfoot. Finally, to take his mind off the stabbing pain in his feet, he acquiesced, and for some unknown reason, chose Ramon Pasco to answer Acacia's question.
"I work as an industrial engineer for a mining company."
He didn't understand why, but he felt compelled to add,
"They're developing an open-pit mine a couple of valleys south of here."
"Ah, the truth comes out. It's always the best path to follow. I think I understand now."
Acacia nodded thoughtfully.
"Let's see. You're helping a group document the plight of the forest so people will understand the impact of their choices and change their ways. And you suspect nature has conspired against you today because you're not a mountain biking friend of the forest at all. That's your weekend persona to ease your conscience about the other 5 days. 5 days that make you guilty."
"Look, it's not that black and white," Ramon complained defensively. "How could you or anyone else understand anyway? Regardless, I'm not going to talk about it to a stranger. Right now, I just want to get back to the parking lot."
But Acacia ignored him, pressing her point.
"So, if nature was a conscious entity, she might be justified in holding a grudge against you?"
"Stop," Ramon demanded. "I thought you said nature didn't think."
"Well, not in the way you mean. She does what she needs to do by reacting to present conditions. It's of no concern to her how those conditions came about. It's just a reflex, like a horsetail swatting away flies. The action has no intention beyond that, except it may be catastrophic to a fly," Acacia calmly explained.
"So I'm the fly? Who are you, really? What gives you the right to judge me?" Ramon spat back.
"You're the one doing the judging,"
Acacia whispered.
"I'm just trying to help you out."
Distracted by his anger, Ramon absent-mindedly stepped off the trail, his right foot wedged between two fallen logs, his momentum carrying him forward until pain shot up his leg and he fell to the ground in agony. Acacia rushed back and gently untangled his foot. Ramon tried to stand, but grimaced and collapsed back onto the ground.
You've sprained it. Sit still and don't put any weight on it.
Acacia commanded. Ramon watched the stick-like woman, suddenly as agile as a deer, spring into the broken trees beside the trail. After a few moments she reappeared, carrying a strong-looking branch, ideally suited to be a makeshift crutch.
See, the forest doesn't blame you for the storm damage, Ramon. In fact, it's giving part of itself up to help you.
She held the sturdy stick out, offering it to him. Through the fog of pain, Ramon thought he could see the former tree limb subtly straightening itself.
Now, I need to wrap your ankle.
Acacia knelt down beside Ramon, peeling a long strip of bark-patterned material from one of her pant legs, reducing it to a cutoff that ended just under her knee. Ramon noted the exposed skin looked raw, sinuous, and damp, like a piece of newly peeled wood.
Won't your leg get cold now?
He sympathetically asked.
I'll be all right, but I can't say that about your feet. Ramon, you should have told me they were freezing.
Once Acacia had finished wrapping his ankle, she helped him struggle back onto his feet, then supported him as he began to limp on. They finally came to the end of the valley. At first, the trail meandered gently up through the trees, but after crossing a swollen stream, it abruptly turned and started switchbacking up the side of a steep ridge. After only the second switchback, Ramon wanted to take a break, but Acacia insisted they push on. He knew she was right, but his body was refusing to cooperate. As they struggled up the steep incline, he felt his mind drifting in and out of consciousness, and his vision began to tunnel down.
Let the forest take you.
He thought he heard Acacia say, her voice now like a suggestion whispered on the wind.
Try to imagine that you're tied to one place. Then maybe you'll understand.
Ramon felt his feet grow heavier, sticking to the earth, gradually slowing him down until he could go no further. The makeshift crutch somehow had wrapped itself around his shoulder so he couldn't remove it, then rooted itself into the ground. Ramon panicked as he realized he was going nowhere. His arms grew stiff and ice began to accumulate on him. Then he felt the cold enter his core, and his mind winnowed to nothing. Ramon tried to roll onto his side, but pain shot up its arm from his wrist. His eyelids, glued down with sleep, struggled open. The wan light of dawn was beginning to tint the sky pink through the side window of a fiberglass camper shell. For a few moments, he didn't know where he was, until he noticed a scrape he had put in the shell the year before, carrying wood for a friend in his truck. Disoriented, he struggled to sit up, but found that he had been zipped into the spare sleeping bag he kept in the truck for emergencies. His backpack was neatly stacked beside the spare tire. Ramon blinked to wake the heads-up display in its contacts, and to his surprise, there was still enough of a charge to power the menu. The time read 5 a.m. Like a quickly fading dream, he remembered the accident, the freezing rain coating everything, the numbing cold, and something else. A vague recollection of someone helping him. He carefully unzipped the sleeping bag, then looked out the back of the shell and noted there were no other cars in the parking lot. With his good hand, he unlatched the tailgate and was about to jump onto the ground when he became aware of the pain in his ankle. He looked down at his right leg and found that a crude improvised tensor bandage made of birch bark had been tightly wrapped around his injured ankle. Using the truck as support, he limped to the driver's side door, opened it, and fell into the seat, gently lifting his injured leg in. He started the engine, then brought the weather up on the satellite link. There had been nothing for the past 48 hours. It had been clear and sunny both days. Ramon checked again, getting the same result, then sat for a moment, staring through the front windshield. It was a perfect midsummer morning, green and vigorous. But somehow, that didn't seem right. He put the truck into gear and pulled out of the parking lot. Then, without warning, it came to him. He had the video. Ramon put the truck into park,
then called the video up on his contacts, fast-forwarding through the whole recording. But there was nothing out of the ordinary. All he had recorded was a sunny day of hiking along a mountain trail.
Thanks for listening to Miksha Stories 83, The Silver Thaw. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, or check us out in Google Plus and Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written and read by Alan V. Hare. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.